My special guest today, Christina Correa. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good. Now, this is kind of a show we're going to do about workers' comp today, because people think that the stressors of police work are chasing bad guys and cops and robbers and jumping over walls. That's fun. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. That's the fun part.
That's the fun stuff. The stuff that really bugs you is when they screw with you in your workers' comp case.
Exactly.
And I know so many guys that have had this happen. And my story specifically, and you've had a – I think your story tops my story.
Oh, no. Maybe. I don't think anyone's – I think we all have some story that are topping everybody else's. I mean, it's just – oh, my God. It's just crazy.
So this creates a lot of stress. And the reason is because I know of so many people that, you know, have gone through this. You and me in particular, you know, it winds up in – financially devastating your household, and you lose your job, and now you don't have a career, and then you have to start a new career, and all that kind of thing. So I'll tell you about my case. So I got hurt in a fight at the police department, and I tore my knee. What do they call that stuff where you get your knee?
The meniscus?
The meniscus, right. So that's kind of serious. I had a couple cracked vertebrae, a couple things. I get injured on duty in my uniform in a police car. My partner and the suspect fell on top of me. They put me in an ambulance. They drive me to their hospital on duty. The doctor says, boy, you're all fucked up. You got to go home for about a month and take it easy. I go home. I take it easy. I come back to the police department to get my paycheck, because paychecks at that time, we were getting paid once a month. And she says, well, you don't have a paycheck. I said, well, what do you mean you don't have a paycheck? Well, because we don't know if it's workers' comp.
Oh, God.
I said, chief, all those things I just said, you know, on duty, uniform, right? We have 90 days to determine that. And they said, we're going to take 90 days. And they stopped paying me for 90 days. And I didn't have a second income or a job, right? So it turned into a big financial problem. Wound up losing our house. Had to get a temporary job. And it took them 6 or 7 years to finally retire me. The whole time, arguing about this, that, and other thing. When presumed it was on duty injury, right?
Yep.
And this creates a lot of stress. And I think one thing I don't get about it is why – the guy that was with you in the police car 10 years earlier and your buddy, who's now an administrator, becomes an instant asshole when he has to handle your case. I don't get it.
Wow, they don't back you, huh?
That's weird. And you have a worse case than I did.
Oh, well, it's, you know, I hear, well, my case and other people's cases, your case. Honestly, this is like a broken record. It's sad that here we risk everything and yet our own department and city doesn't take care of us.
Right.
But with my situation, I was a cop 15 years. And I got hit by a DUI driver, where I was almost squished to death. Hematoma to my pelvic area, hurt my knees, my neck. Had a few things happen. Went back on the job. You know, fought because I was brand new. I didn't want to stay off the job.
Right.
I wanted to get back right away. Get back. Had a few other altercations with different incidents, from fights, you name it. And then I was shot in the line of duty on 4th of July of 2000.
Shot after you had the car accident.
Yes. This is several years later.
Yeah.
And basically, I fractured my humerus, shattered my radius. I was partially paralyzed. Was told I was never going back to work, never going to be able to use my arm again. Well, I beat the odds. And I was determined, and I was working out twice a day. Had the city hire me a personal trainer. I was doing acupuncture, you name it, massages, anything I could possibly do to get my arm back. And I was able to open my hand I got shot in July, open my hand on Thanksgiving, and then a year and a month later, which I had to use a whole month of my own sick time.
Right.
So I wouldn't avoid getting fired or, you know, laid off, and beat the odds and went back to work and fought to go back to work. I was on the job another 6 years, another 8 years after my shooting. But during that time, I had two more surgeries. They thought I had carpal tunnel and cubital tunnel, so they gave me the surgeries for that. And then I went back to work full time. And what's funny is I was on Survivor during that time.
Oh, while you were on duty, you went on Survivor.
Yes.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So I was back on the job full time. Yeah. Everything. Got back. Was on Survivor for a little bit, and then they tried to use that against me later on when I retired, because I retired 2 years later, and I had numbness in my hands, and I kept saying it's not the carpal tunnel. I think it's something more. Well, instead of them just sending me to the doctors, they used up my time, and now I had to either retire and get paid, or not retire and not get paid. And at that point, I had to pay bills and do all my things, and I still, like you, I lost a house I had. I went through a lot of struggles, and basically have been dealing with work comp for about 8 years now, and it's been a struggle, and they're still trying to deny some things, and it's, I found out a lot through the process of them getting rid of paperwork, documentation, to where I've had to go to court several times, had different judges. I mean, it's just a game, and it's sad.
Yeah, it is a game.
They stress you out so much. I mean, they try to complain against me because I was upset when they weren't taking care of things, and they try to give me a complaint. And I remember one time I was like, go ahead, give me the complaint. I'll sign it, I'll fill it out, and I'll actually give it to a lawyer because this is disability discrimination. You're trying to stress me out, and this is not right. It's been an ongoing struggle, but through it all, I realized there's something good to come out of it. And I realized I'm going to start helping other first responders to let them know their rights, what they should do to keep make sure they have all their documents, make sure that they don't go through what you and I have gone through. This is not right for anybody to go through.
Yeah, it's odd because you assume when you join a police department that you're taken care of.
Yes.
Now, you have to participate in that, okay? You can't be an asshole.
Yeah.
You can't break the rules. You can't do all those things,
exactly.
Right? But if you're an average police officer like yourself and mine, well, I'm not sure it was an average one. I started a POA. That might have pissed him off that I started the police association, now that I think about it. But other than that, you assume that these things are taken care of. Now, here's what I found that kind of blindsided me. I filled out the paperwork. The chief told me, well, looks like you're hurt. Go on, fill out this paperwork, go home, and we'll check on you in a month and go see the doctor. I'm assuming the ball's rolling and they're taking care of things. Absolutely not. And you guys cannot assume that when you fill out that paperwork that for your workers' comp, which they make you do, by the way, right? That's a company policy, mm-hmm. usually. You cannot assume that that's happening. And I didn't want to get a lawyer. I don't want to have anything to do with that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And eventually I had to get a lawyer. Well, eventually, by the time this case was over, 6 or 7 years later, I knew more about the law than my lawyer did. Because cops are good at looking up the law, right?
Exactly.
And we may be better at lawyers in some ways because we can take a practical application and say, you know what? That matches right here. So finally, how I got some movement on mine was I found a section under workers' comp in California. I can't remember the number, but let's say it's 5847. 5847 is the one that says you're presumed to be injured mm-hmm. as a police officer, right? There's another code that goes with that that says if you screw with me as a police department and handle my workers' comp claim with some intent to delay, mm-hmm. that's a criminal charge.
Wow.
That's not just a civil suit, right? So these guys think they can hide behind a lawsuit.
I should have done that a long time ago.
I know.
They've
it's
that
a
several
section,
times.
Well, it's a section that people are chicken shit about, right? But my lawyer didn't want to pull the trigger on that. It's like, well, we all got to get along. And I said, I want you to go down and arrest these assholes, okay? And if you don't do it, I'm going to walk in and say, you're under arrest. Well, then they're going to retire you for being crazy. I said, well, let's put another one on there, right? So eventually I went to one of them and I said, here's a section. And if you keep fucking around, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Right. And then it moved a little bit, but it still took
several years.
Now, did you find, because, I'm reasonable. I know you're reasonable. Did you find now in retrospect that it wasn't all the time that they were screwing with you? I find that sometimes you get a new judge, you get a new lawyer, you get a new guy, a new clerk at the police department, mm-hmm. and they just got your case and they're just not handling it.
Yep. I mean,
that does happen, too. So this is where I think the police officers have to be careful not to approach it from a completely malicious point of view.
Exactly.
Because when you do that, you're really giving the responsibility to the police department to respond because they're treating you badly. When you also have to participate.
Exactly. Well, you got to get involved. I mean,
learn the law. Right.
Yeah. Well, what happens, I realized, with my situation, I had a lawyer that actually died of cancer during my process.
Terrible.
Now I had a new lawyer
right.
who was trying to take over and not knowing every single thing that was going on. And my case was so convoluted because I've had so many injuries from
right.
my arm to my neck to my back to my knees, you name it. When you go to these doctors, it gets convoluted too because you're trying to tell them everything, but you also don't want to sound like, okay, a broken record and, tell them this. But there's things you forget because other things are worse than others, and it's so convoluted. But then at the same time, I went through one judge to another judge, and because they made it, delay it. And it just, one judge says one thing, they don't do it. Next thing you know, you're going to another judge, and now that stuff isn't brought up anymore. And no one knows what happened with the deposition or, if things were convoluted. I feel like they really either want you to stress out so much to where you give up and you just sit, call the shots and be like, okay, forget it, I'm done. I want to just settle, or I want to get out of this and give up. Or they expect you to die, So I don't know. This whole thing, the whole system is so wrong, and it's not helping anybody. And I think the ones that end up worse off are the ones that are the good ones who are not abusing the system,
right.
who are not trying to take advantage. The ones like you and I, we've wanted to go back. I went back and struggled, even with pain and all, but went back. But then now when I had to retire, when I was forced, now I'm getting screwed with in other ways. It's just,
yeah, it's very odd that they that they don't take that into account. And then there's sometimes people have something similar to your injury, right? And they're miraculously retired. Yeah. Here you go. Here's your badge. In fact, here's a party for you.
Yeah,
here's
exactly.
The plaque. Here's the cake and a big bash, and you're out. Yeah. And other people, it's like, no cake, no plaque, no badge. You just go away. I think most guys go away,
yeah,
which is kind of weird to me.
Well, they also, sadly, if you think about it, the people who make a stink, who get upset because now they're getting played with and getting screwed
right.
with, once you start talking, now they're even getting more pissed off, and now they're going to be screwing you through more.
Yeah,
and
well,
you're on, things more. So you're on their shit list, you know?
You're out of the club.
So, yeah.
I mean,
so
it's a club, right?
So, yeah. And then you get this name, oh, she's trying to work the system, or she's trying.
Right.
When they have no idea what you've gone through. I mean, I remember when I called in sick the first day when I was having the numbness to my hands. And I had a lieutenant who said, oh, I don't understand why you can't come to work. We have someone here who has one arm, and she's, you know, she works every day. Well, she was born that way. She was born with one arm. And I go, are you trying to tell me you don't believe me? Are you telling me that, are you assuming I'm lying? And are insinuating I'm lying? And he's like, oh, no, I'm not saying that. I'm like, well, you are, because I had surgery in both my arms. I was shot in one, and then I had surgery in both. I said, so I'm having numbness in my hands. I'm not going to lie about this, because I'm not going to jeopardize someone else at work when I go to work. I said, you know, I don't understand how you're like, may accuse me of this. At that point, he just started backpedaling. Oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't know. You know, let me know what you need. And then now became, okay, I better back off. Later on, people told me you could have sued. You know, it's a disability discrimination. They're, you know, he's basically telling you you're lying when you really indeed have these injuries. And I remember talking to my lawyer about it, who died of cancer. And he's like, oh, no, don't worry about suing the city for that. That's, you know, that's no big deal. Let's just let it go. Well, looking back, I'm like, yeah, I could have sued. And, you know, the thing is, they play so many games. They try to scare you. They try to, you know, hey, we're here to take care of you until you get that lawyer that they don't want to talk to you.
Well, you have to get a lawyer. It's too convoluted.
You have to. Yep.
Now, workers' comp in California, the idea, and I'm no lawyer, but I played one on TV once, it's no fault. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. The whole idea is you have an injury. I give a medical bill. You pay for it. You're back to work. We're all done. It never turns into that.
Mm-mm.
They look at it, in my opinion, as if it is a lawsuit against the department, when California law sets it up as a no-fault situation to make workers whole. Because back in the day, when you fell in the pit and you got impaled on rebar, they said, well, here's a Band-Aid, see you later, and nobody did anything, right? And this is what I don't get. They force you to get a lawyer, and then it's still not litigation in the same sense of suing. And by the way, you can't always sue for something beyond workers' comp. Does that make sense?
Exactly.
Yeah, in other words, maybe you're filing a claim, but unless they do something else, you're not suing them for another thing. Like this guy screwing with you, maybe you could sue him as a tort action.
Yeah, it would be more like a labor law. There's two different things when it comes to work comp or labor or civil.
Yeah.
Like if you get hit by a car, like the DUI driver, when
I
get hit by her, we end up suing her because it was like an accident, a car accident.
Third party thing.
So you sue her. But the thing is, what people don't realize, when you get a settlement from that, you got to pay work comp back for any kind of medical that they distreated you with.
Well, that's another thing.
So there's so many things you find out the hard way.
That's another thing I think is interesting. I think some police administrators assume that you're trying to get a whole bunch of money out of it. And I got to tell you, I got two crack vertebrae, a bunch of other parts that aren't working too good. But, you know, I still get by for an old guy. But nobody got rich off that.
No. You don't get rich off anything.
You don't make any money. It's not. No. So you're not suing out. If you have a sex hot tub party after off work and you get caught doing that and you sue the police department for that, that's a whole different thing.
Exactly.
But that's not what workers' comp is.
No.
It's just I got hurt and how come my brothers and sisters aren't helping me out on
exactly.
that? Exactly. You know. So did you find that the police officers started distancing themselves from you socially?
Oh, yeah. I mean, even now that I'm retired, I mean, I don't see anybody. It's really rare. And when I do, it's the one that I was closest to. But the ones I really thought I was close to, we don't talk anymore.
That's
and
sad.
Then you start hearing things of, you know, oh, yeah, she's trying to play the system, or she's trying to do this.
Yeah.
Or and you're like, are you kidding me? Like,
you become a suspect.
And I'm like.
No, you're a suspect.
But those same people call you when they want to talk to you about work comp. Hey, so who'd you get? What happened?
Oh, yeah.
And it kind of makes me laugh. But, you know, my thing is, I have a bulging disc in my neck. So I had neck surgery. I had a non-invasive back surgery. I've had my knees have problems. My arm has problems. I have all these things, and yet I still function. I still do things. And
I must
that's
say,
what they don't
look,
like.
You look pretty good for all those.
Well, thank you.
Wouldn't you say, Tony? She's doing pretty good for all
thank
that
you.
Stuff.
But that's the thing with work comp, because you look healthy and you don't look like you have those injuries, which are not visible, then they assume you're playing the system. And you know, it's funny. I used to be a PI and help with those cases and taking pictures of work comp cases.
Yeah.
But I also look at it two ways. There's those people that you know are playing the system. And then there's other ones that you know, are taking their trash out because they can't pay for someone to take out their trash. Yeah, they're not going to pay to begin with, you know.
Right.
So they have to do it. Whether there's pain or not, they're going to have to do that. Whether cleaning, you know, their own stuff or taking the trash out or lifting bags, they're going to have to do it, pain and all. You might have that pain for the one, you know, like do it and then have the pain the next day, but you still got to do things. And that's how I am. I'm always moving. I'm always keeping myself busy because they say like a body in motion stays in motion.
Right.
If you start laying there in bed, you're going to complain more about those pains. And what I see with work comp also is they keep prescribing.
Yeah, let's talk about medicines.
Oh, my gosh. It drives me up the wall.
They wanted to operate on me. They wanted to give me certain meds and things like that. And I wouldn't do it because I got a friend of mine who has to use a stick now to wipe his ass because he's had so many surgeries on his shoulder. And it's sad, right? And I never wanted to go under the knife. So I get to some points during the year where I just can't really move, right?
Yeah.
And you work through it. And maybe eventually I'll have to do it, but I've got by 20-something years without it so far. Right? That's amazing. You're moving with all that stuff. You have very good surgeons. So, and I've heard of cases of friends of mine, or no friends of mine personally, that get on the pain meds. They get hooked on the pain meds, and that's it. You're done. I mean, once you get on that.
And then you have these cases where these golfers, you know, they're hooked on the pain meds. Now they're shopping for doctors. And then they get in trouble for that. Now they get fired.
Because they're addicted.
Yes. But yeah, it's not their fault. And the way I look at it is I tell them, you know, go get a lawyer. You know, go sue those people because work comp is the one prescribing you these pain meds.
Right.
Without them, you wouldn't have got these pain meds to begin with. And, you know, maybe get your pension back. I mean, there's ways to look outside the box to protect yourself. But, you know, I think we as first responders, we always assume that our department or their city or whoever's going to take care of us, when realistically we're just a number, you know. And when something happens to you, guess what? They don't have your back. And they're not going to keep all your paperwork. And I have boxes and boxes of paperwork that, thank God, I've kept. But to go over through all that stuff, it's so time-consuming.
And then you came up with an idea for a mobile app for this.
Oh, yes. I'm working on this thing right now. Everything is going great. And I want to make sure that what I'm going through, no one else has to go through.
Yeah.
And the city is going to regret that they put me through this.
You know, it's funny you should say that. I have to go in and qualify for my CCW every year. It's very confusing. They say every year, but my CCW says 5 years. Now there's a new chief, and I get a phone call. What about this? And I go, well, you're supposed to give me a CCW till I drop dead and give me insurance for the family. We don't have a record of that. Well, it was 20-something years ago. You should have a record of it. Well, we don't. Well, just because you don't have a record doesn't mean you can change the agreements of how you've been performing for 20 years, right? And I went to go find my case. Boy, I couldn't find. And I'm pretty good at it, right?
Yeah.
But it's like four or five giant boxes. Yep. You know what that looks like.
And when people move, I mean, you lose things.
You move, you lose stuff. And I was trying to find the agreement, and I finally found it. But if I had not had that agreement, my whole case might have been changed, right? So talk to me about this social aspect. I still have a lot of good friends in the police departments. Some of them are retiring now, but some are chiefs or captains and stuff. It took a lot of work on my part to maintain that. People didn't call me up and say, how you doing, buddy? I mean, a couple people would come by or say hi or something like that. But for the most part, it's like, well, you're not here anymore, that kind of thing. I found that very, very hurtful in a way. But I think what happens is if you're pegged as being damaged, and you know how vicious police departments can be, people don't want to be standing next to you if you're damaged because they're going to get damaged.
Yep.
I get that part. I appreciate that part because it's tough to maintain your career for a long time. But I don't understand why they couldn't, you know, why people can't, you know, off to the side or it's a private matter or something.
Yeah.
There just seems, but it's not unlike if you just left on your own, didn't get hurt or anything.
Exactly.
Sometimes you're not part of the club.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a trust issue? I mean, what do you think the component is? I think it's
odd. There's a lot of different issues. I think, I mean, you can't blame everyone. I mean, sometimes people don't understand when you're going through something, just like when someone dies. You don't know how to respond to somebody.
You know,
saying,
it's kind of like that.
Yeah. So
right?
You kind of don't know what to say. I'm sorry. Or, you know, when you talk to that person, you kind of almost like want to avoid that person. Well, same thing when somebody gets injured. I mean, I lived in the city that I worked in. So, I mean, there was no excuse really for no one to stop by and say hi to me while I was
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So there was probably, I can on my hand count how many times people came to my house to check on me. I worked for my department and I love those people. And the other times, I mean, I'm struggling. I mean, I went through so many different issues myself that I went through. When I got shot, because I wasn't sure if I was going back to work, wasn't sure if I was going to use my arm again, wasn't sure what was going to happen with my future. At the time, I was dealing with an ex-fiance who was cheating. I was dealing with my mom and just a lot of different personal issues. And it was a big mess during that 1 year.
So ironically, you had a series of injuries that were very serious and culminated in a less serious injury, I'm not trying to minimize it, but you know what I'm saying? Basically, almost died, and then it came down to I got metacarpal problem or something, which wasn't the same as almost dying in a car crash or shooting, and that's the one they screwed with you on.
Yeah.
That's very odd.
Yeah. Oh, and it's funny because when they tried to take me the work comp case to the court, they were trying to show the judge, trying to tell him that I was there for carpal tunnel. And the judge, you know, and the judge kind of gave me this look at first. And it was so funny this when he started asking me all my injuries, and I told him I was shot, I was hit by a car, and this and that. He's like, wait, you were shot?
And you're in court.
Yes.
And you were pregnant at this time,
yes, by the way,
too.
Yes, I was pregnant at the time. I ended up losing my baby at the time. I'm probably from stress, you know. But you can't prove that, and they're not going to prove that, you know, or even discuss that. But it's sad. I mean, they put you through so much. But I remember the judge telling them, oh, my God, you made it seem like she was just here for carpal tunnel. You know, like she just retired with carpal tunnel.
That's how the city presented the case,
And I remember the judge even telling them, you know, I want all her medical records. And, of course, years later, they delay it again, and we didn't come back in the year like they were supposed to. And next you know, I have a new judge, and everything's changed. I mean, they really delay things. They make things prolong things. They stress you out. They have you go through financial problems. They have you go through relationship problems. You're going through so much in work comp. And the people, this is one thing about the other officers, I think a lot of them don't want to come and see you or check on you because, first of all, they're probably not sure how you're going to handle, you know, them coming in and causing more stress, or they don't want to be in the middle of it because it is, you know, an ongoing investigation
they become a witness, right?
Yeah. So, there's so many different things. Yeah. And then, you know, they can be involved in something later on. I can't blame them sometimes for not wanting to go and check on somebody. But at the same time, I think that we have an obligation as, you know, when you're in law enforcement, it's a family. We should be a family. At least that's what it should have been. And that's how it was when my dad was a cop and my uncle. But things have changed now. I feel like we're kind of like almost like everyone's out for themselves. And no one's really backing each other up like they used to. And until something happens to them and they're going through the same thing that you and I have gone through, then they'll understand. And it's sad that they have to go through that to see it.
Now, how long ago did you get out?
I retired in 2008, so I've been out 8 years, and I've been still dealing with work comp, and I'm just now starting to deal with the
settlement. So I went out at 96, I think, right? So I've been out a long time. I, you know, through contacts, stories, you know, visiting buddies and stuff, I've heard of and seen certain things about how the job has changed, the officers have changed. You're much closer to it. Tell us how things have changed since you went in. When did you go in?
I
went in 83. Okay, so you're about 10 years. All right, so you were in longer, and but you started, you know, in the 80s, it was a lot different. As it got to the 90s, it started to change, in my opinion, right? So tell us how it evolved in your career, because you were in a lot longer than I was.
I mean, I was fine. I mean, I'd never had any problems. I mean, at least I didn't think I had any problems. I didn't feel I had any kind of discrimination, you know, in the sense of like, or any kind of harassment like that while I was on the job. Everything was fine. Until I started dealing with the work comp stuff is when certain people who I thought were my friends, who I've known for years, supervisors, all of a sudden kind of started changing, like you said. And all of a sudden, I just feel that when I was going through my retirement, I started hearing things from those same people that I thought I could trust. And next, you know, I feel like all those things that happen also dictate to what can happen in your work comp case. Because they have the contact with work comp now, because they're still at the department. They're still dealing with everything.
Right.
So, I mean, they don't realize that, you know, and I really wish officers right now would cover each other, is whatever you're saying, whether joking or not, the city, if they hear things, they're going to take things seriously and they'll use it against the other person. So whether some officers joke, oh, hey, I saw that person out there partying, or I saw that person out there drinking, or, you know, he should be on work comp. Well, those things start becoming evidence, and they don't realize that could be used against that officer. And so I think that people have to really be careful that, you know, they're not trying to make the officer look bad when realistically they have no idea what that officer is going through, or the fireman or the first responder. Because we're all going through our own struggles, whether it's mental, whether it's physical, whatever it may be. And those other issues become bigger issues later on, and heaven forbid that it becomes an issue where now they're committing suicide. So
yeah, and that's a big component. Under the shield, we get a lot of, I don't have the numbers, and I'll get them for you guys, but that's going up. Yeah. Suicide rate among first responders, police officers and stuff, or attempts is going way up. And I think this is all tied into the same thing. It's all tied into the stress. So, again, you know, one thing you guys can do with Under the Shield is our hashtag is We Hear You. You can find us on social media, but undertheshield.com. Again, we offer this non-HIPAA reporting, stress coaching, right, where we confidentially talk to you. You don't have to tell us what your name is. You don't have to give us your phone number. If you've got a problem, you're not really working through it, and it's becoming a problem affecting your job and your family, you know, give us a call. If you find that police officers changed since you went in, so you were going in when I was coming out, basically.
Uh-huh.
And I was, interestingly, I was trained. This is all just the timeline, right? Mm. My training officers were from Vietnam.
Wow.
I had one guy that was an old timer, but most of them were, well, I don't know, 10 years older than me, right? And that group of people eventually retired a little earlier than I did. And they had people that had combat experience. Mm-hmm. They had, this camaraderie issue. We had female officers in my departments, in the 80s. Nobody thought anything about it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a big deal. And then it kind of shifted. Then it started changing. So then, my generation then takes over and I become a training officer. And I don't have a military experience and I don't have those kind of things. But I was trained by some really good guys, mm-hmm. right? And now I see, the next generation is I got my Nintendo. Or then the next one is I got my Walkman. And then, and now we're up to, by the way, did I tell you I went to the police academy? So I went to the police academy at Napa.
Nice. Napa, huh?
There is an academy there. It's the Napa Community College. It's a good college. It's a good academy. It's non-stress. Not stress.
Yeah. Probably drinking wine all the time.
Well, even better. They take balloon rides. So I walk in there the first day, and I'm looking at the TAC office, and here's the symbol of the academy. It's a nice 5-point star. In the middle is a hot air balloon.
Oh, funny.
So if you look out across from the academy, you can literally see the hot air balloons right there, right? And I said, yeah, that strikes fear into the hearts of criminals when you see that badge with a hot air balloon on it. But they're a good bunch of guys. It's a good academy. And they have a recertification course for POST. The old timers can go in there and get recertified, right? Because I'd expired.
Yeah.
So I'm a licensed police officer, technically, although I don't have a department right now. Now, what was interesting is basically they were teaching us the same kind of stuff. They had new laws. Yeah, okay, I can figure out that. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of young guys in there. And what happened was when I was a police officer, a new police officer, nobody got laid off.
Yeah.
You just didn't talk about laying police officers off. Now, that happens a lot.
Yeah, you hear it.
And I said to this one guy, I said, how old are you? He goes, I'm 25. And I go, how could you possibly be out of police work? Well, he went in at 21, and he got laid off. And then he couldn't get a job for 3 years.
And then you post.
His post expired. He had to come back, right? And so the young guys, it's like, hey, you want to go get a beer after here and choir practice and all that stuff? Nope. I gotta work on my phone. I gotta do. I'm not knocking them. It's just a different generation, right? So I'm wondering if some of this contributes to it, where there's kind of this not the same. Yeah, did you find as you got older in your career that the younger guys didn't have the same bonding or something? Was that going on?
Well, it's weird. I mean, I see different things. I mean, when I was on, we did have some of the choir practices, and everyone vented, and then it got to a point where people weren't venting anymore. People weren't talking anymore. People were doing their own thing and going home.
And the department started cracking down on
exactly.
that stuff
no
and
one
shining
wanted,
it.
Exactly. Yeah. No one wanted them to be in the parking lots anymore or hanging out. So it does. I mean, it changed things. But I think it also changed to where now everyone's worried about themselves, not about everyone else.
Right.
Because before, everyone could talk about things, talk about their issues,
we did.
The stresses of the job.
Yeah.
And now no one does that.
Really?
I think it's so important to talk about whatever stress you're going through, whether you've had a bad day, there was a shooting, whether it was a child, died in your hands, whatever it may be. We all go through different stresses, but you need to talk about it. And if you don't, it does bottle up, and people don't realize that.
Yeah, that was the cope to us, and I still am friends with a lot of guys that are retired now, and there may be a couple of wackies out there. We know who you are. But for the most part, everybody's pretty well-balanced, right? Interesting. And I think that was because we would sit down. We tell war stories. Telling the war stories kind of got it out there, normalized your behavior.
Yeah, and you joked about it. You didn't have to be so serious about it.
Yeah,
you joked about things.
You were being judged. Yep. And by the way, if you fucked up, they'd say, you stupid fuck. Yeah. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. What did you do that for? And you'd have an argument about it, about tactics. You talk about it, and you worked it through, right? And you'd be openly criticized if your tactics were not good. And if you could accept that, you stayed in the club, right?
Yeah.
And then we have the dark humor problem, right? That's another issue. I mean, cops, they do that, right?
Yeah.
So I will confess to one. I had a suicide. It was very sad. And the guy left a note. And we had had him. I was actually doing dispatch because at San Gabriel, we had to do dispatch one day a week, small department. And I'm on the phone. And the guy calls me and says, I want to commit suicide. Now, I had this guy. I was like, I don't want you to commit suicide. I get what you're talking about. He was coming around. He was talking to me. And I was putting the mute button, and then I was dispatching the call, right? So my buddies arrive, and literally this was right across the street from the police department. And I said, okay, he's in his front room. Here's what's going on. He's threatening to shoot himself. He has a rifle. And I said 3 times, do not knock on the door. I repeat, do not knock on the door. He does not want contact. Let me talk to him. Mm-hmm. I will have him come out. The 3rd time I said, do not knock on the door, in my earpiece, I heard, police. And then I heard, boom. The guy blew his head off on the phone while I was talking to him. Now, I was not only sad, I was fucking pissed off because I told these guys, don't knock on the fucking door, right? And I ran across the street and I said, what the fuck? And we had it out, right? I mean, we had a big, not a fist fight almost, but we had it out. And the guy had written a note on the wall about why he was sad and all this kind of stuff. And that, you know, that bothers me to this day. But on the other hand, I did what I could do. Yeah. And tactically, it didn't work out. And, you know, the police officers have to have protection. So if you've ever seen somebody's head blown off by a rifle, basically it just turns it into a jack-o'-lantern, right? It's empty. The guy's eyes were gone. His brain was gone. It was just hollow. And so one of the guys comes up and takes a streamlight and puts it on the top and shines it. And then the light starts coming out of the guy's eyes like a jack-o'-lantern. And he says, Happy Halloween. And we laughed. I mean, we're kind of like, because, I mean, this is a horrific thing to see, right? So you have to try to take something you've never seen before that you're not supposed to see, by the way. We're not supposed to see people's brains not inside their head. And I think this is a coping mechanism.
But some people don't understand that. I mean,
I know. It's
civilians
hard
out there don't see
it's,
that.
It's hard to get that, right? It sounds like it's cruel. It's whatever. And I got to tell you, and I'm editorializing, so you need to jump in and tell me to stop talking because you talk as much as I do. But I always felt that police officers are the most empathetic, compassionate people I've ever met. Because think about this. You can't go out on call to call to call to call like this with people in the most tragic situations in their life, and you see the worst things that happen to people and that they do to each other, unless you have some sort of empathy to feel you can help.
Yes.
Really. Now, a lot of guys get all grizzled up and get all grouchy about it and be tough and all that kind of stuff. They're still in the game. Because if they weren't, they'd get out, right? What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I think it's one of those jobs that you're going to have the macho, you're going to have the egos, you're going to have the guys that, you know, will not show their emotions. But I think things are changing now. But I don't know if they're better or worse.
But there's still, see, even all those personalities, you need those personalities. Yeah. I was a skinny runt. I couldn't kick a door. I was 160 pounds, right? But my buddy Kenzaki was a bear. Uh-huh. He could kick a door in. So you need all the
There's a balance. Exactly.
It's balance on all the personalities. Yeah. But I think at the core, even all those personalities participate in the police department as a whole and make the team, right? And I just feel the team now is kind of
thrundled. Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think you also nowadays, I mean, it's back in the days, like they probably would have called it the good old boys or whatever.
Right.
It has changed, and you know, but then at the same time, it's a good thing because you do get weed out the bad officers that are out there that are ruining for the good officers, and especially right now, heaven forbid, you know, so sad what's going on with the officers getting killed. A lot of the good officers are getting killed.
That's right.
And because of, you know, the people protesting against the bad officers, but what they don't understand, there's a way to get rid of the bad officers. You know, there's a way to investigate. There's a way to, you know, paper trails, all that stuff, rather than going out and killing innocent officers who are actually there to help them, and yet they're getting rid of those officers.
Well, and you shouldn't kill bad officers either.
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, that's right. No, exactly. No, yes, exactly. No. But I'm saying now, right now, you know, it's the good officers. I mean, any officer is getting killed out there, and that's not right. That's not the way you handle things. So it's scary because, I don't know, I think people are... Things have changed, and I don't know if it's for the better.
I think it's training.
Well,
what do you think about that?
Well, I think that, you know what, as officers, looking back, I mean, when it comes to training, you know, we had shooting, and we'd go shooting all the time, but with self-defense, I think they need to really push that more, but they, at the same time, they also don't want to have officers getting injured during, you know, self-defense training, you know, hands-to-hand combat kind of stuff, because you're right, we do get a lot of injuries on those those training things.
Oh, yeah, you do, yeah.
So it's like I don't know, it's catch-22, like either give them more training, but same time, we really monitor that training and how it's being, instructed, because that way we avoid those injuries. But sometimes when you're doing those kind of training, you know, the self-defense, hands-on stuff, you are going to get hurt, because if you're doing things kind of like, you know, to put somebody in a hold or whatever, you got to make sure that you're doing it right. But sometimes people go a little bit above and beyond, and all of a sudden now someone gets injured because they can't stretch that much or whatever, and they get injured.
Now, did you go to Rio Hondo?
I went to Rio Hondo.
So I was class 61, and we were the last, quote, stress academy in California. They got rid of all that stuff. And now you had to jump over a parking lot delineator instead of a wall and all that nonsense they did, right? I always felt I was not stressed on the job. When it comes to tactics, interaction with criminals, chasing bad guys, I got shot at on three occasions. A guy died when I got in a fight with him. Well, all right. what's on TV tonight? Not a problem for me. Mm-hmm. Because I thought I was trained by the best people mm-hmm. at Rio Hondo, and I felt confident in my tactical abilities and my communication skills.
Yes.
And I felt if something went right or wrong, that was all on me and my training, and that was my coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. And now I hear training is kind of not the same. It's they're trying to cut budgets, and they don't get as mm-hmm. much. And I think that contributes to an officer's personal stress. If he feels his life is threatened, mm-hmm. he's going to respond appropriately, and that's totally appropriate, by the way. But if you're tactically trained in a different way where you didn't feel your life was threatened and you could take one more second to respond, that might be a solution. It's a very fine line. It's a very tough call. And you can never second guess a guy that thinks his life's being killed.
Exactly.
You cannot go there because it's not – I'm a dumbass. I'm fearless, right? That's stupid. I'm not saying that's great. And some guys have a sense that, you know what, I'm in danger. I'm going to act on it. And I think we're taking that line and we're moving it way too far apart.
Yeah. Well, you know, as an officer, we all say we're fearless, but there's also to a point. We know what point where our hairs in the back of our neck go up and we say, okay, that's going to keep us alive.
That's right.
But we're fearless in the sense we will go into battle. We will go run into the crowd while people are running away. That's what being a police officer is about. We're not going to run away from the problem.
No, you run to it.
So
my
thing is, though, when it comes to, training and being out there and being faced with certain things, and everyone's so quick to judge an officer when he handles a certain situation a certain way, but yet they're not in those officer's shoes. They don't see what the officer's seeing. They don't feel what the officer's feeling. You know, they're not seeing it from his perspective. Everyone has a different perspective. And it's pretty interesting because you could, for instance, if you have some guy running into a room, you're in a classroom, there's like probably 20 people in the classroom. Some guy comes running into the room, steals a purse, and runs out.
Right.
You're going to have so many different descriptions of that guy. You're going to have so many different perceptions of what people saw. I mean, it's perspectives of things. I think that's the same thing when it comes to people judging these officers when they're shooting somebody and the officer feels he shot him because he was in fear for his life. And yet they're so quick to say, oh, no, he just killed that guy because he wanted to, or they make it a race issue, or they make it something else. Until they know within that officer's shoes or head, they're not going to know.
Well, I got to tell you, and this is for my non-law enforcement friends, because my law enforcement friends know this, and I've worked with hundreds, maybe 1,000 or so mm-hmm. police officers in my career. I never met one that wanted to kill anybody.
Exactly.
Right? Because that creates a big pile of shit.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, let's just be practical about it. Mm-hmm. Let's say, you know, you're aggressive. That doesn't mean you want to kill somebody because you got lawsuits, you got mm-hmm. your family's interfered with. It's not a good thing. And by the way, that's practical. And let's talk about morals. Nobody wants to kill somebody morally, ethically.
Exactly.
Unless you're a sociopath. And mm-hmm. by the way, we tend to find those people and weed them out, right? So this notion that, you know, cops are aggressively trying to kill people, it's just not a practical answer to things, right?
Exactly.
So did they make a mistake tactically? Perhaps. Did they use judgment in their opinion? That's not the judgment you have as a Saturday morning quarterback. What? No, I'm not a sports guy. What is it called?
Monday.
I get the day. It's some kind of quarterback.
Something, yeah.
Tony, help me out here. A Monday morning quarterback or
that's it.
Monday, after the game?
Monday morning quarterback.
I don't
have
a sports gene, you guys. I'm sorry about that. You know what I'm saying? So they're second calling this guy when they don't know what to talk about. And I know when I was at the academy at Napa, I guess that year sometime they had somebody from San Francisco newspaper that was very critical of police, always papering them, writing things up. And they invited her to attend the academy, and she did. And that's – Napa, I would not say with hot air balloons, it's a super stress academy. I got no offense, you guys, all right? But I'm not thinking that's a super high stress. But she went to the academy, and, you know, they do shoot, don't shoot, and stuff. And, boy, when she got out, her whole editorial
changed
on it, right? So I think these are things that are effective. And, you know, if you know a cop, ask a cop. If you got a friend, family member, that kind of thing, they're going to tell you the straight dope on this stuff.
Yep.
And you don't need to be adversarial about it. You don't need to confront them. You don't need to accuse them of things. You can't make assumptions about stuff because it becomes a dangerous environment.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, I feel so bad for these officers right now. They are second-guessing themselves. They're worried about if they're going to go to jail or if they're going to, you know, taken care of by the department.
Wasn't there a recent shooting with one of the officers that's why she didn't shoot and she really got beat to a pulp?
Yes.
What was that case? I can't remember.
It was just recently. She was outside and, the guy just kept beating her, and she said she didn't want to shoot him or because she was afraid that she didn't get sued or arrested. It's sad. I mean, we shouldn't be thinking that way. We should be able to do our job. you know, and not stress about those things. Yeah, you're going to think about things. You're constantly thinking about things. When you're in a situation, you know, you're making sure that you're doing things right. You're shooting if there's, you know, a clear backdrop. You know, you're having all these things go in your head. But that's one, you don't want to be thinking about one more thing of, okay, if I shoot this guy, take that second, like that second just to think, okay, if I shoot this guy, am I going to get sued? Am I going to get arrested? No, they should be like, is he going to kill me or not going to kill me? And you know what? I'm going to shoot him before he shoots me. That's it. That's all they should be thinking about. Not, okay, gosh, am I going to get sued?
Yeah, it's very simple. It's very linear thinking. Yes. And it's based on the escalation of force, which is a legal and a moral ethical doctrine that tells you how to when to apply it. And it's not difficult to apply if you think about it. But if you put that second guess in there, that's what caused it. There was that, who was that officer that made that video? Dink Wilder. You ever see that video?
Mm-mm.
So I use this in my active shooter training. This guy was a pretty highly decorated police officer, and he was aggressive. And they called him in and says, you're too aggressive. And if you do that again, you're in trouble. So he died. And you watch this 5 or 6 minute video on the dash cam, one of the first dash cams. He pulls up. The guy in the truck in the video in front of him gets out of the car, starts dancing a jig, teasing him. And all this officer said is, sir, get back in the car. Sir, get back in the car. Sir, get back in the car. Then he pulls out a rifle.
Oh, yes, I did see that
one. Yeah, and the officer says, sir, get back in your car. He keeps repeating this script that somebody obviously put in his head. And then the guy starts shooting at him, and he keeps saying, you know, sir, stop. And it took a long time for him to even get his gun out and return fire.
Yeah,
and the poor guy died.
Yes.
And he responded perfectly to his training.
Yep.
Okay? So we have to train officers to respond the correct way, and that's very sad. Yeah. So these are stressors that cause even a second delay in your ability to respond, you're dead.
Yep.
That's just the way it goes.
And that's the thing. I don't think people realize all these stresses unless they're in their shoes.
Yeah.
And what I always mention to people that bring up all these different types of topics, they give me all these scenarios. I'm like, I can't tell you if it's right or wrong because I was not there.
That's right.
You know, I need to know the whole story, all the facts before I can determine if the officer was in wrong or right. And even then, I couldn't tell you if he's in the wrong or in the right because I wasn't there. But at the same time, I tell them, go to one of those simulator classes, you know, those simulation machines.
Yeah, those are good.
They're awesome. And so if they take a chance or time to go take one of those classes and feel the stress and it's not even real, they would understand that you have to make a split second decision and that your life is basically at risk during that time. They're not going to judge an officer after that. I mean, they would realize, okay, yeah, you know what? I can't say anything now.
I was talking to some guy. I can't remember where it was. Younger guy. Whatever the department was. Their policy was you cannot take your gun out of your holster unless you were authorized to engage in deadly force or something like that. And I laughed and I said,
that's
are you
ridiculous.
Out of your mind?
By the time you take it, it's like a gunfight at a cowboy shooting.
I was a motor. Right? I did a lot of contacts with a motor, thousands a year, right? I can't think of, I mean, seriously, my status, my standard response was off the bike, gun out of the holster, gun in hand at my side, and I approached you on the passenger side. Yeah. I didn't approach you on the driver's side. I had my gun out everywhere I went.
And no one ever said anything because you did it
in
a way that was.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And if I had one more second to get up before you tried to cap me, and by the way, I can't tell you how many times I found guys with guns on the seat when I came around the passenger side, right? And if I took one more second to take that out of the holster, I'd be dead.
Exactly.
He'd have a drop on me. And now they're telling cops, oh, no, we can't take your gun out. That's going to offend people and so on. This political correctness is going to kill people.
Yep.
That's the problem. I only saw one shooting in the last couple of years that I went, that was a guy that got the police officer shot somebody in the back. Remember that one?
I don't.
That was kind of sad. There was somebody fleeing the police officer, and he shot him. The police officer shot the suspect as he was running away at quite a distance, by the way. And that was sad. I still didn't second guess it, and I thought, you know, if he had a button for a nuclear bomb, that'd be a good reason to shoot him. Legally, I'm not kidding, right?
Well, but the thing is,
could be something.
Maybe this way. What if you look at it this way? Because you know, we all have to like kind of. There's pros and cons to everything. What if that person that was running is still armed and now they're running towards the school? Then, you know,
that's
look
why
at that
I looked
way.
Bad at first. And I don't know the disposition. I think this officer, for whatever reason, got in trouble. I'm not sure he should have either, by the way, because we don't know.
Yeah.
So in California, remember when you, I don't know, you might be too young, but you used to be able to shoot a fleeing felon in California.
Yeah.
You didn't have to be armed, by the way. That guy robbed a bank. Pow. Yeah. And my old sergeant that was a cop in the 30s and 40s. He used to say, well, we used to drive down the San Gabriel Boulevard and we'd shoot your tires out and stuff. Just like the good old days. So we've evolved, and that's probably.
But also I feel like.
But you could legally do that.
Yeah, but you know, that's probably why people didn't run, because they know there's consequences for the actions.
There's another reason. That's right.
You know, I mean, yeah. I think things have changed too. Now people are getting away with so much because they're so quick to sue the police department, sue for whatever they possibly can, say they have rights for everything, when realistically they're the ones that just committed a crime. They're the one that just killed somebody. They're the one that just did something illegally. But yet now they're blaming on somebody else. They always want to place the blame on someone else rather than take responsibility. And at the same time, when it comes to, you know, being in a shooting situation, there's one saying my father and, you know, a lot of my friends are cops, before I was a cop, would say is that always be judged, or I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6.
Yeah.
And you know what? That is so true. I mean, I'd rather come back to my family, and if they're going to risk the chance of, you know, charging me or whatever, I'd rather have that go happen than not be here at all. So, I mean, you're basically doing what you feel is the best for that situation, and it's up to them to decide whether it was wrong or right. But what, you know, you feel at that time or that moment is what you're going through. And if you're going to shoot somebody because you honestly feel that you're in threat, your life is in danger, or somebody else, then you're going to shoot that person.
Yeah, and you got to keep your stress levels under control, because if you don't, you're not acting properly,
exactly.
Tactically, you know,
yep.
That kind of stuff. Well, Christina,
wow.
It's been quite a conversation.
We can talk a lot, can't we?
I know. Mr. Tony, I think we'll wrap it up maybe a little early on this show, but thanks for coming in.
Oh,
I appreciate it.
Thank you. We're definitely going to talk more about work comp and take care of people.
Absolutely.
Let them know their rights. Yes.